Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Crump.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. And ESPN 92.5. So this Texans coaching search is taking a little bit. There's still some other coaching vacancies out there, but most of them have been filled up in this coaching cycle. You have any good theories on why this might be taking as long as it's taking for the Houston Texans?
Funny you should ask that, Jeremy. I always have some kind of a theory. And in thinking about this and kind of just sitting back for a second going, what are they doing? I mean, let's all kind of have a little bit of a crash course in. First to announce they had a vacancy last year, last to hire. This time, I don't think that anything that happened with Brian Flores would have sped the entire process up much based on how they seem to go about things. And I think the one thing that they're really good about doing in certain circumstances is overthinking. And I do believe that because of how it ended with David Culley and because of all the scrutiny that they face, and I've already told you how they're a little bit, maybe more than a little bit, too sensitive and concerned about what other people think and say, that they probably are still internalizing all the different, what if we take this guy? What if we choose that guy? If we truly want the guy that everybody thinks that they want in McCown, how bad is it really going to get? How much worse can our reputation be from the national media to the football people, et cetera? I think they are overthinking a lot, and then I do think that because of the aftermath of the Brian Flores suit, that there was even more to think about. So now, as much as I think we all thought, hey, you're not supposed to do any announcements Super Bowl week, they're probably going to do an announcement this week. I think there's a pretty good chance now that they wait till after Super Bowl.
It seems like the Texans are down to two candidates, maybe three if you're of the belief that Brian Flores is still in the conversation. And there's some reports out there that saying Brian Flores is still part of the conversation and the Texans are still doing due diligence on all three candidates. I don't necessarily believe Brian Flores is a true candidate. Just my thoughts. But it
I
looks
agree.
Like
they got to say the right thing.
Right. And so I really think the race is down to two. I think it's down to Josh McCown, Jonathan Gannon. At the very least, Brian Flores may be in the mix. Kevin O'Connell's done, though. He was my favorite. Jim Harbaugh, turning down – actually, I don't even know if he turned down Minnesota. He's going back to Michigan. That's what we know. He's going back to Michigan. He's not going to be the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. It seems like they're zeroing in on Kevin O'Connell and will announce him after the Super Bowl, so take him off the list. Texans are down to, some would say three, I'll say two, with Jonathan Gannon and Josh McCown. How do you think that the fan base of the Houston Texans would react knowing the candidates that are out there? Brian Flores is still a candidate, maybe not a finalist. How do you think the fan base would react if it was Jonathan Gannon?
I think that they're going to be a little more open-minded because he has more experience than either David Culley or Josh McCown. But I think that they still will approach it with apprehension and still have the questions of, why didn't you interview more candidates then? Why didn't you talk to more guys with more experience that, whether you were enamored by a bigger name or not, at least have conversations and request interviews? The worst thing that could happen is you have to announce, or they have to announce, that they elected, like an Eberflus in the past and others, just elected to not interview with the Texans. But because it was the least attractive job on the market, it still behooves you to ask every single person and leave no stone unturned and let them be the one that say that they weren't interested or they got a better offer from a team with more talent.
If the Texans announce Josh McCown as the head coach, how do you think the fan base is going to react?
It is going to be outrage. It is going to be an uproar. And you know what? It's unfortunate. If you're Josh McCown, it's a very unfortunate situation because you didn't do anything to deserve this. You just played the game of football. You love the game of football, and you know the game of football. But as we've talked about in the past, there's just so many different factors and layers. It's going to be one thing, he doesn't have any experience. It's going to be another thing, you know, from the standpoint of not even from a head coach, but a coordinator or NFL coaching experience. Then it's going to be the association with Jack Easterby, and that is going to drive the Houston Texans fan base absolutely bonkers nuts. And then the third thing is going to be, if you hired a guy with as little experience as you did a year ago with David Culley, and now you're doing it again, whether right or wrong, there's going to be people pointing the finger going, you didn't learn less the first time?
Yeah.
You didn't learn less the first time that you didn't get a guy that has enough experience to be able to make simple decisions?
See, I'm okay with Josh McCown more than most people. I'm still aware enough to know that the fan base is absolutely going to hate it if and when Josh McCown is hired as the head coach. Jonathan Gannon might not get as bad of negative PR as Josh McCown. He won't get as bad of negative PR as Josh McCown because at least he's been a coordinator. At least he's been an assistant coach in the NFL at some point in his lifetime. Brian Flores would be the popular of the three, but again, don't feel like he's a real candidate. So you have negative PR from Gannon. You have even worse PR from Josh McCown. Here's my theory, and I'm interested in your thoughts on my theory, and I'm interested in our listeners' thoughts on my theory as well, 713-780-3776. Tomorrow is the last day for Houston Texan fans to lock in reduced pricing for the 2022 and 2023 season. Tomorrow is the last day. Let's keep in mind that the NFL is a business. What do we talk about all year with the Houston Texans? People aren't showing up. People aren't renewing their season tickets. People aren't happy with the direction of the organization. Nobody's showing up for tailgating. The Texans are at rock bottom in terms of fan interest from where they've been in their entire career. Maybe not rock bottom, but at least the worst it's been in the entire existence of the franchise that started back in 2001. Like, I already know that the PR level and the approval rating for the Houston Texans is at an all-time low, but it would get lower if it's Josh McCown. It would go a little bit lower if it was Jonathan Gannon as well. So if you're running a business, why would you announce a negative PR move the day before it's the last day to lock in reduced pricing for the 2022 and 2023 seasons?
It's a fair point. Look, I think that the other thing that they never felt like they were going to be in a position to have to worry about, that they're now being force-fed at a very, very rapid rate, is you aren't who you used to be, and we can mess with your bottom line because we can make sure you don't have 70,000 names on a waiting list anymore, and you are forced to sell group tickets and look at a stadium that's less than half full. Your merchandise isn't rolling off the shelves anymore. You know, there is a way to get to even the highest holier-than-thou owners in the NFL, and fans are starting to make some inroads. Whether they know it or not, it's starting to affect them, and it's starting to be a concern of theirs. So it's a valid point, because I can tell you they never even had a group sales department in the past because they never had to even fathom what it's like to have to sell a section of tickets because everybody was coming out of the woodwork at all times. They had to go to Texans games. But we saw it last year from the secondary market. You could get tickets to a Texans game for $19. Cameron, a buddy of mine from Fitz Roofing, got two seats in the fourth or fifth row in the lower level for $40 a piece for whatever game he wanted last season because people weren't interested anymore. You're right. If it's Josh McCown, now you're going to take the lack of interest based on the roster and the talent, and you're going to take a level of pissed offness in the fact that they don't think that Nick Caserio and company know what they're doing.
I think a lot of times that even us and fan bases in general, not just in the city of Houston, lose sight at times that it's a business. And a lot of times, maybe even most of the times, owners prioritize the bottom line more than they prioritize winning football games. Like, we're going to talk about tanking a little bit later. Like, how much do the owners care about winning versus caring about how much money that they're making? And like you said, for the first time in the history of this organization, they're trying to figure out a way to squeeze the most money that they can bring in out of the fan base, because the fan base is as upset with the Houston Texans as they have ever been before. So we've already seen the fact that they reduced pricing for the 2022 and 2023 season. Why did they do it? They did that because season ticket renewals are going down, down, down. The stock is going down on the Houston Texans and PSL and season tickets and all of those things. They know they're still not going to be very good in 2022. So why did they do that? They did that to try to get into the good favor of the fan base, try to curry favor of Houston Texans fans, trying to keep them, trying to hang on to them. And if they know the deadline's coming on February 4th, if Josh McCown is hired as the head coach right now, you get zero renewals, or you get zero people purchasing season tickets between now and that deadline tomorrow.
And I think, Jeremy, the one thing that they will never even fathom But when you start talking about the ability to create goodwill, right? That's kind of what you're talking about. The ability to kind of get fans back on the bandwagon, so to speak. It's not about lowering season ticket prices, although it helps. It's not about doing something with merchandise or giving them more perks like they did a couple months ago when they announced what they were trying to do to appease their fans. It's about Jack Easterby. It's about some of the moves that are made that is that have caused the biggest amount of backlash that the organization has chosen to choose to turn the other way and look the other way and take the other cheek on, which has annoyed the fan base. Like, it doesn't take a football aficionado or expert to figure out that this guy, through association and decisions and otherwise, is not a good dude and a very experienced or knowledgeable dude on the football side. So that's also where they're getting some of their criteria for how harsh they're going to be on a Josh McCown or how harsh they were on a David Culley. But as it goes even further, you've got a guy that videos surface from one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, to in the locker room trying to give out game balls, to being overly visible on the sidelines and at practices for the media to point out, that people are going, who are you? Why are you there? And whatever said that you have any right to be on the football side of things, let alone the salary that came out, the title he has. And what everybody knows is because he's Cal's best friend and churchmate, he is getting special attention to have jobs and money that most people would die for that they can't get their hands on.
Even if it's only symbolism, right? Like, even if we believe, and I think we have tons of reason to doubt this belief, but even if we believe that he is adapted into his new role as CEO of culture, whatever the heck that means, and he's not responsible for the 53, and he doesn't have the ear of Caserio and Cal McNair, which I think we know is not exactly accurate, it's the symbolism of having him around. It's why Josh McCown probably is not going to get a fair shake in Houston. Like, I can look past the experience, but the fact that he's boys with Jack Easterby is difficult to look past. As far as it goes from, like, the business side, like Poncho on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, said even if fans don't show up, they're still post 92% capacity of NRG in terms of ticket sales. 92% is a problem. 92% as opposed to 100%, which they were getting for year after year after year, is optimizing the amount of money that they can make, right? Like, if you do the math, some quick math, you know, 92%, so you're missing out on 8% of a 65,000 crowd. If you're just say the average ticket price is somewhere around $50, and it's probably more than that, and that's not even counting merch, it's not even counting beverage, it's not even counting parking, you're losing out by losing that 8%. And a very conservative estimate of $250,000 a game. You times that by the 8 games you have at home. You want to throw in some preseason games as well. You're looking at millions of dollars being lost by this organization. And you might be saying, well, they just paid Culley all that money. Obviously, they don't care. Do you think an owner doesn't care about losing $4 to $5 million a year?
Absolutely. Look, and I've told you the stories having worked for a Les Alexander and knowing what we know about from Tillman's time when all of his businesses were leaking oil due to the pandemic and the fact that they didn't want to pay Mike D'Antoni one extra year at $5 million a year. It matters. I told you that Les Alexander used to take the American Express bill for the organization every month and just circle some of the most minuscule charges you would think a multimillionaire didn't care about. And he'd start making calls himself going, what'd you spend this for? What's this for? Why are we spending this and why'd you do that? Because millionaires, you can try and affect them a lot of ways. That's why it goes back to the conversation when we used to have the ex-NFL guys that said, hate to break it to you, but owners don't care about winning like you think they do. They care about the bottom line. And that's how you get to them. That's why we kept saying, stop buying tickets and merchandise and send a message. Don't tell them you hate them and pick it. Do something that's going to actually affect them, and that's how you do it. It
gets their attention, right? It's something that they notice as opposed to people complaining on Twitter about where the Houston Texans are. Or you can hold a big sign in front of the suite like Ronnie does. That'll get their attention as well. Houston, how do you feel about that theory? The fact that that season ticket renewals are due tomorrow, that reduced rate 2022 and 2023, do you feel like the Texans are holding out on bad news on the hire as head coach with the idea that they can still squeeze a few million dollars out of the city? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Lots of text on this. We'll get to your text and calls when we return. Also, why it's taking forever, but let's be honest. The head coaching position, is it even that important with the Houston Texans? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Apollo Men's Health. Doc O is the best in the business, and I believe in Doc O. I met with Doc O about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and he told me the things that they do on a daily basis, the experience he has, and how he can change the energy levels that I have and really make a difference as I wanted to get back on a workout program, lose some weight, take care better care of myself. He put me on a plan that works. I'm still on it to date. My body fat's way down. My cholesterol, which was an issue for me hereditarily, is way down. And my energy level is way up. And I thank the people at Apollo Men's Health on a daily basis. That's why I speak for them. And so many people that have heard me speak about them have signed up too. And they speak in just great detail about how happy they are. Check them out today. Go to ApolloMH.com and see all the ways they can help you. It starts with hormone therapy for both men and women, so you get that energy back in your life. It can also go with a workout program where you start with a full body composition analysis, and then you chart your results on a week-by-week basis to see the strides you're making. If you want to recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy. They also have fat burners and things for your smoothies. Two locations to better serve you. Set up your first appointment. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurances accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Get a free B12 shot like I get every Friday. And check out all the ways they can help you. Be honest with your answers when they ask you tough questions. Tell them what you're trying to do. They'll put you on a plan that works. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. One of the texters saying, hypothetical, the NFL owners and Goodell have a meeting with Cal McNair to hire Brian Flores. The NFL can say, see, his lawsuit has no merit, and as a favor, they help Cal with the Deshaun suspension thing once he's traded. That's out there. That is a bit of a stretch. And the one thing that, like, this is a hard no for me, but the one thing, too, like, Nick Caserio, his job is on the line with this hire. Like, whoever he hires as the next head coach, he has to be willing to be fired with if he fails, whether it's Brian Flores, whether it's Jonathan Gannon, whether it's Josh McCown. He has to put everything on the line for this hire. So if there's things above him where the NFL's telling Cal to hire Brian Flores, which I don't think that they would do, like, if I'm Nick Caserio, that would really rub me the wrong way.
So as we talked about, it better be on the line. It should be on the line. But with the Texans, you never know if it could be just another milestone that he passes up while he continues to be general manager of this team, because they don't follow the unwritten rules. They don't do what every other sports team does in terms of, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you, and then you're gone. And so you do have to somewhat worry about the fact that this might not be his last hire, though it should be. And with that, it should be more pressing to get the right guy and not try to get someone that you're thinking could turn into that guy. But evidently, and we don't know what goes on internally on a daily basis, but it seems that people that come to this franchise have a little bit more flexibility, and because of it, a little extra confidence that basically feels like they have some immunity. They can do some things that they might not be able to get away with in other organizations and do just what they feel like doing. And because there's no firm authority at the top of the pie chain or the food chain with Cal, and because his reputation in the past was that he just handed over the keys to Bill O'Brien, why wouldn't he do it again? Why wouldn't he do it to Nick Caserio and or Jack Easterby? Why wouldn't he just continue to stay away and let them try and save the day? It's weird. It's wrong. But it's the norm with the Houston Texans. You don't see it with Jerry Jones or Daniel Snyder, right or wrong, or the Mara family or all these owners that are out in front of all of these decisions and making a stand, and right or wrong again with what's going on in Miami. But you know you got an owner that's so passionate about winning that he may or may not have done some things that are unethical. But at least you are seeing and hearing from ownership, and you know without a doubt who's in charge. Here, we don't know who's in charge. The GM told us 2 weeks ago, Easterby's not part of the people in charge. But now if McCown gets hired, we have no choice but to believe from everything we've heard that Easterby's not only a part of it, he might be running it.
Yeah, as far as it goes from like the Brian Flores situation, I don't feel like he was a candidate before the 58-page complaint. I don't feel like Nick Caserio wants an equal as the head coach. He wants somebody who's a subordinate, which Jonathan Gannon and Josh McCown would be. Also, I feel like after the complaint, the chances of him being a head coach, while this is something that still is, you know, hanging over the NFL, that is hanging over Brian Flores, to me, he's impossible to hire at this point. Like, I believe what Brian Flores said. I believe that Stephen Ross offered him $100,000 to lose games. I believe that Brian Flores, you know, believes what he believes. I totally believe that. But what if Brian Flores is lying? Like, what if the slim chance that Brian Flores is not telling the truth? Because Stephen Ross came out yesterday and said that Brian Flores is not telling the truth. Everything that you heard is made up. It's not true. And it's just that's what Stephen Ross's side of the story is. So it's all, you always have to look at both sides of the story. Do I believe Brian Flores? Yes, I absolutely do. Do I also think that there's a percentage chance that he could be making it up or bending the truth a little bit and Stephen Ross might be closer to the truth? Absolutely. So if you were to hire Brian Flores and it comes out that he made it up and that Stephen Ross never offered him the $100,000, that's a hard thing to sell to your fan base. That's a very difficult thing to have the head coach employed that made up this story. I don't think that's the case, but you always have to account for the possibility that it could be.
And sure, that is a chance that you'd have to take, but you also have to commend a guy that's willing to put basically his career on the line to take the stand that he's made. He has Belichick, who's admitted to the text and saying it was his bad, to say that, look, he had every reason to believe that he was absolutely just being used as a pawn.
I'm talking solely the Stephen Ross $100,000.
But I think that that's not going to affect people's thoughts on Brian Flores as the next Houston Texans coach. As much as being a guy that is able to stand up for his own beliefs.
Now, if he comes out and he was just flat out lying about $100,000 was being offered, that's a terrible look.
Well, and it is, and I get that, but I think that as part of what he was trying to do overall, it's not the first or the last time we've heard people that have fabricated some things on the way to trying to get the end result that they're trying to get in an overall suit of that size. So, yeah, you're right. But it's even worse when he says, "I'm a man, I speak in truths." So you don't want a man that speaks in truth talking out of both sides of his mouth getting caught. But I do think from a positive side from the fan base, as much as everybody thinks this is a negative for what's happened, because of the reputation of the franchise we talked about yesterday, there's a lot of people that believe you could do a lot worse to turn everybody's opinions on that by hiring a guy like this.
Yeah,
I said I like a guy that's willing to stand up to Nick Caserio, that's willing to put his foot down and stand up for what he believes. I believe that a lot of players, because of what he's done, will want to play for him, as opposed to not a lot of players want to come to Houston right now. So I think there are ways you can kind of spin this to find positives if he's still a candidate and gets your head coaching job. I just don't think he will.
To be clear, I think Brian Flores' case is stronger than Stephen Ross's case. I believe Flores over Ross, but you do have to throw into the equation the off chance that maybe it's Stephen Ross who's the one that you would believe here, not that I do. Josina Anderson reporting a little bit earlier on the Texans, saying that, "I'm told the Texans spent the last 48 hours or so thoroughly vetting the staffing plans for each of their finalists to a certain viability, availability, and fit. The outcome of that review is very important to this process, as is alignment per league source." You look where the Houston Texans were a year ago, and you kind of project where they're going to be next season with head coach, offensive coordinator, head coach. Like, if you look back last year, and I know that they only won 4 games and they lost 13 and they were one of the worst rosters in the NFL. But if you were to look at the coaches who had the most value on game day for the Houston Texans, did the head coach, David Culley, have more value than defensive coordinator, Lovie Smith? Did head coach David Culley have more value than offensive coordinator Tim Kelly? I could argue that last year and the way the coaching staff's going to shape up going forward for the Houston Texans, that there's more responsibility on game day for the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator than there is for the head coach.
I see that, but I didn't even realize Josina Anderson was still working, by the way. But when I
Why'd that throw me for such a loop?
When you read, because she just fell off the face of the earth. She was on ESPN, and then all of a sudden she wasn't, and then all of a sudden it was like, where'd she go, and when is she coming back?
Oh, she's working all right.
But, okay. The thing that I look at when I hear that is, because I've lived it on the basketball side of things, I think the organization is also worried about Nick Caserio, because he's a control freak, wants to be able to pick assistant coaches. He wants to still have that power. There's a lot of coaches that aren't signing up for that. And one of the things, and we're going to have him on the show today, but one of the things, and maybe we can even ask him about it, but he ended up being more laid back than I thought he would. But based on his resume as a player and a general manager, I didn't think Kevin McHale would ever, ever agree to having someone else pick any of the people on his staff. At the end of the day, and maybe it was money driven because he was getting an offer he wasn't getting anywhere else, he agreed that he only had to have one of his own choices as an assistant coach, JB Bickerstaff. He allowed Daryl to pick the rest, and he not only did that, but he took our guy, Kelvin Sampson, who was a finalist for the job, and put him on McHale's staff, which would have ruffled a whole lot of feathers in a whole lot of camps with coaches that were applying for jobs. I think that it's the norm. It's coming to be the norm, or they want it to be the norm with the Houston Texans. So I think that's more of a hot button than people may realize.
Well, I 100% think Nick Caserio is picking the assistants.
At least I hate most that of this too.
Yeah, and that's why you want an equal as a head coach. And I agree with that, but I don't feel like that's why he's going to hire as equal as a head coach.
Yeah.
But putting that conversation aside for a moment, and you looked at the way that Nick Caserio's building this coaching staff last year with Cully as the head coach, Smith and Kelly as the coordinators. Next year, whether it's Gannon, McCown, Flores as the head coach, and then whoever they bring in as the OC and the DC. Like, on game days, who has more value to winning a football game with the way that Caserio's building his staff, the head coach or the coordinators?
It's got
to
be the head coach because the head coach is in the trenches.
You believe that?
It should be.
You think that Cully had more value than Lovie Smith last year?
No, I'm saying you said for next year.
Right. I'm not saying the way you think it should be. I'm saying the way that Caserio's building the staff, who has more value? Because I agree that's the way it should
be. It should be.
But the way Caserio's building
it's the exact opposite.
Exactly.
And here's the problem that I have, too, and it's something that we talked about a little bit. And that is, you can take jobs you used to do, but when you get titles that kind of – you get certain titles and certain amounts of power that should preclude you from ever doing those things again. Like, when you were the analytics guy on the headset – and talking on the coaches' lines during games with the Patriots, it's one thing. When you're the boss that makes all the decisions that everybody's already looking over their shoulder at, they're going to be more worried about you listening to what they're saying in the regular conversation of the game than any conversation on a game day on a in-game decision. And so you got to pull yourself out of it because it's doing you more harm than good. And I don't think he sees that.
And if you're looking at it from who has more power on game days, head coach versus coordinators, do you think that Nick Caserio was calling plays for Lovie Smith or Tim Kelly? Absolutely not. But we know at least one occasion that Nick Caserio was telling David Cully what he should be doing as a game manager as the head coach. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, Kevin McKell. Basketball Hall of Famer, former Rocket coach. He joins the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Doc Linville. I'm a big fan of Doc Linville. And Steve from down the hall was looking today and I said, can you take your hat off? Can I see the progress on your hair? Because he has been talking to Doc Linville as well. And he's like, oh, my God. He goes, and how long are you into this? I go, I'm only 3 months in and I'm not supposed to see the real results for 6 to 9 months. But the NeoGraft procedure is where it's at. If you guys are losing hair in certain portions of your head, and you think that it's never a possibility to be able to get it back, you can, and it's all natural. It's not sprays and foams and medications. This is your own hair taken from where you have a lot of it, like the sides and the back, and put where you don't have as much. Maybe it's your hairline like me. Maybe it's the back of your head like others. But the bottom line is it's a 95% success rate, and that's what you want. You want natural, and you want success, and that's what you get with Doc Linville. And even more so than that, as an ESPN listener, if you go to 975hair.com, they're going to waive the consultation fee of $150. You meet with Doc Linville and his staff for absolutely free and ask all your questions and find out if the procedure's right for you, and you save money. And he also said he's going to take care of the listeners by not raising his prices if you mention ESPN 97.5. So check it out and see if after asking all your questions, it might be right for you too, like me and John Granato and Fred Fowler and so many others. You can be the next in line to have the results, get your self-confidence back, and get that hairline back and all the hair you used to have. It's a fantastic process. Doc Linville is the expert in his field, and you do it by going to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. Tune in Saturdays to hear the Whiskey Neat podcast with Chris Hart. Each week, Chris discusses barrel-aged spirits with industry experts and celebrities. The Whiskey Neat podcast, Saturdays on ESPN 97.5 or listen wherever you get your podcasts. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get Kevin McKell on in a couple of minutes. Rockets beating the Cavs last night, 115-104. Pretty good Cavs team.
I watched it. Oh, really?
31-21.
Their best player sitting out?
They're twice as good as the Rockets record.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, just saying they're having a good season. I'm not saying that they...
It's hard to watch basketball, Jeremy.
You think... I love watching basketball. I was watching basketball last night.
I'm talking about that particular style of basketball.
What do you think of Evan Mobley, by the way? He looked pretty good.
He really good. Really good. I thought it was going to take him a little bit longer to fill out and develop and get stronger to go up against NBA competition. But his ability... And I still think his ceiling is a Chris Bosh-type player. But his ability to get to his spots in the paint and not get pushed off of them, and his touch around the basket is better than I thought it was going to be, quite honestly.
I was worried about his strength, too. So that I am surprised he's playing a little bit more muscle in the NBA game than I thought he would. All right, let's go out to the HRP guest line. Basketball Hall of Famer, former Rocket coach Kevin McHale is joining us. Coach, I want to start off a little bit off topic with football. You're one of – now, your situation different than a lot of these other people, but you were one of very few people who started as a head coach without ever having any other coaching experience. And the reason that this is pertinent in Houston, Josh McCown is a finalist for the Houston Texans job, has never spent a day as an NFL assistant. Can it be done?
Yeah, but I think you've got to be in a I was in the front office of the Timberwolves for 15 years and coached there for two different separate times. And was really involved, especially when I took over and Flip came, Saunders, our head coach, came from the CBA, the old Continental Basketball League. He and I spent a lot of time putting together practice plans, what we need to work on. Flip had a good way with the players, was a good guy, and just some things he wanted to do in the NBA. Actually, today's NBA has been fine for Flip. Flip wanted to switch everything back then. Back then, I was like, if you switch like a guard onto Karl Malone, it's going to be really bad for that guard. It's
not going to work.
And he switched everything. So I was involved from the day-to-day, from the coaching stuff a lot. And I thought that gave me a big advantage. But I was also like in the front office of a team for a long time. I think you have to, I think you can do it. I think you can go. I mean, Steve Nash kind of did it. You can go from player to coach, but I do believe that you get a whole new idea and a whole new kind of way of thinking about how hard the job is, how many hours go into it, all the things you got to prepare for. It's not just games, it's practice, it's travel, it's just a ton of stuff go into it. And I think you have to have some experience. I'm not sure you have to be an assistant coach forever, or one of those things, but I think you've got to be in the basketball or football after playing at some level in a management to kind of figure it out.
Coach, another thing that comes up, and it was almost started with your hiring here and getting to know you and become friends with you like I have, it still surprises me to this day that you were okay with it, but now the Texans are trying to do something similar, and that is letting your general manager pick your assistant coaches. I know you were able to bring one in JB, but I've talked to so many coaches along the way that said, Kev's a better man than me because just like you need camaraderie and togetherness in your locker room from a player perspective, you got to have that trust and that togetherness amongst the coaching staff, and especially in the case of your staff, you accepted Kelvin Sampson, the number one competition to you to get the job, to be on your staff and made it work. Is that something you're seeing now and realizing it's actually going to – you thought maybe it would go away, and it's actually taking shape to where everyone's trying to do it?
Yeah, no, you know what? JB came in, Buck was there with me. The guys that kind of – like Chris Finch, they had put him under contract. Mm-hmm. And they asked me just, can you find a place for Chris? And I'll give, to Daryl's credit, he said, if it doesn't work, we'll definitely get rid of him. You know what I mean? Or we'll put him somewhere else.
Okay.
And I said, yeah, no problem. I'll give him a shot. And Chris ended up being one of my favorite guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I really liked Chris. It was great. Kelvin came in and I said, Kelvin, you're going to run the defense. That's what we're going to do. And it worked out really well. I really enjoyed Kelvin too. I mean, he was feisty. He was different than I was because, Kelvin would take like a practice day on a Tuesday and would be as serious as game seven of a conference final. You know what I mean? He just would be ripping the guy. I'd be like, damn, dude, Kelvin, it's Tuesday morning, man. Just easy a little bit. But that was his mentality, and I liked it. And, I wasn't surprised at all when he went to Houston. And his teams reflect that. They grind. They're tough. They're tough. So I liked a lot. It was different in the fact that, I was able to always say yes or no to – the final, are we going to take him or not? Like with Chris Finch and even with Kelvin. It is like, we really like Kelvin. I met with Kelvin myself. It's his sure decision. So, I didn't mind that because I said those relationships to me all worked out well. And I ended up, becoming friends with the guys and working with them. But it is different in the fact that I looked at it and, being in the general manager spot that Daryl was in, I did see at times where coaches just got way too comfortable with the people that were on their staff, and they didn't challenge them enough. And I asked our guys, JB and Chris and Buck and, you know, Calvin and everybody that was there, you know, if I'm wrong, you got to tell me I'm wrong. And, you know, you got to challenge me. You know, if I'm making mistakes, I have to be challenged. And I think sometimes coaches don't want that. But I know, you know, Joel, you'll know me. I don't mind that at all.
Yeah.
I actually enjoy it. It makes you think a little bit more. So it all worked out. But it's different, I think, for a lot of coaches, a lot of the old-time coaches that never GM'd in there. I GM'd for a long time, so I understood, you know, trying to have some input as a GM and the coaching staff, and it didn't bother me.
Kevin McHale joining us on the HR&P guest line, and I'm curious, with you wearing that GM cap, you know, the Cavs and the Rockets played last night. Jalen Green, the number two pick of this past draft. You look on the other side and you see the number three pick of the draft, Evan Mobley. And a lot of people want to make comparisons. You want to start having opinions on, and did the Rockets get it right? At what point can you start evaluating rookie classes? How deep into their career?
Oh, I'd say, you know, starting their second year. I think the first year is just so much situational. You know, you might be a guy who got drafted a little bit later by a team that had a good record, though, just happened to pick up a draft in a trade or whatever. And you're going to a place where you might be the third or fourth best talent on that team. That's just talent. But at that point in your career, you might be the fifth, sixth, or seventh best player. Big difference between player and talent. And so that first year, you know, you might not get as much time. You might not be able to show as much. You might be put into a role where they expect you to help the team win, as opposed to a role where they expect you to put up numbers and become – I mean, look, let's face it. I think it's something that happened in Houston, too. They wanted these guys to put up numbers and become Rookie of the Year and, you know, screw the wins. And I think that's a tough way to learn the NBA, honestly. And I think that stays with you way too long. I've seen it happen. And it kind of scars players into becoming kind of point hogs as opposed to, you know, chasing wins. So I starting their second year and then, you know – really second, third year, and then do they push their team to win? Like, not do they put up big numbers and lose all the time, but can they get their team to start winning? Those are the guys that are unique, and those are the guys that end up, you know, being special players. They not only have talent, but they push their team to win. And the hardest thing to do in the NBA, okay, and I argue with this point with all these guys that were not talented because they think scoring 25 like was hard. The hardest thing to do in the NBA is win. It's not hard if you have talent to go get 25. You know, some nights you might have to take 23 shots to get 25 points, but you can surely do it. Hell, everybody on the team is way better off when you take 14 shots and get 25 points. You get to the line and you do your thing and you're very efficient. That helps you win games. But putting up points is not hard in the NBA if you're talented. Winning is unbelievably hard. And at some point, all these kids have got to be able to say, yes, I can. Drive my team to wins, or no, I can't. And unfortunately, I will say that most of the guys, they can't drive their teams to win. That's how hard it is to win in the NBA.
Coach, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, because of the fact that he has ties to both franchises, you with the Celtics as well as here with the Rockets, but the passing of your old coach, Bill Fitch, yesterday, yep, caught me off guard, even though he lived a long life at 89. I know he put you through some hellacious practices, but your thoughts and memories.
Well, Bill was a tough guy to play for. Bill kept you on edge. Bill thought you played better when you were pissed off, and so he tried to piss you off all the time. And he was very good at that. Let me tell you something. Bill got very good at learning how to piss you off. But you learned a lot from him. I learned a ton of basketball from him. I was a better NBA player because of having Bill Fitch for my coach. Now, I will tell you one thing. I didn't like playing for him all the time. I mean, we got into it quite a bit. And but he was a tremendous basketball coach as far as we had offenses back then that we put in. It was a cut and read and react offense. We came down. It was more of a high post offense because the year before that Robert and I got there in 1980, the fall of 80, they had Dave Collins and Rick Roby were the centers. They were kind of a high post offense. Well, Bill kind of ran the high post stuff, but eventually he went, nah, man, look at these, you know, to Robert and Kevin. We went down to a low post read and react offense off the break. It was, I tell you what, we didn't, a lot of quarters, we wouldn't call a play. We would just run this offense. And it was impossible to guard because I read your cut and reacted off what you did. So, like, there was no set call. It was just reading. It was really, I mean, it was a tremendous offense. And Bill was really gifted as far as, you know, putting stuff together. you know, and I tell everybody this, you know, you look at Bill. Bill gets to Boston, gets to the conference finals, wins an NBA championship, gets to the conference finals, and then we had a bunch of injuries, and we lost, I think, in the second round, his fourth year. And he averaged over 60 wins. He got fired from Boston. I mean, that never happened. You know what I mean? That guy,
yeah.
That guy, but it was amazing kind of what he did. 3 out of 4 years, the conference finals, 1 year of the NBA, win championship. And, you know, but Bill was an unbelievably gifted basketball coach. But I tell you, there were days, man, I was trying to look at something for life, trying to find out what I could find something to throw at him and hit him in the head.
basketball would be a starting point.
Yeah, he made you a better player, though. Yeah, he really did.
All right, Coach, I hear the Boston every now and then I know you got the Minnesota. So I'm going to ask you real quick. If you got which one you go to for the better accent, and then on top of that, if you had one go-to food, which one you going? Somewhere from like Chowda in Boston? Are you going somewhere up there in Minnesota like some of them damn ice fishing things you did?
No, I'm going to Boston. I'm going to North End. I'm going with all my Italian friends up there.
Oh.
I'm going to go have an unbelievable Italian dinner right in the North End where the mafia used to run it. I came up there, and a guy says to me, you know, I couldn't find a place to park. So some guy goes, like, you know, this is yo, Michele. I said, yeah. He goes, give me your keys. I was like, I'll take care of your car. And so I'm like, what? And so I got to know this guy. He was my valet. I'd give him $20 when I came out. You know, we'd have dinner. And so I looked at him one time and I said, you know, I said, what, you know, how about crime up here? He goes, there's no crime up here. He goes, we're the police up here. Look at you steal someone's car, I break your leg. He goes, nothing happens up here that we don't know about. It was all run by the mafia. It was great. It was the safest spot in the world to go up there if you knew the great people up in the North End. Plus, you got good food. And their accent is 1,000 times worse than my Minnesota accent. I didn't understand. I went out there, honestly, I didn't understand them at times. They would start talking. I have no idea what they're talking about. They're talking a foreign language. But it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed
that. So you were on the ins, and you made offers that they couldn't refuse. Okay. We're learning more every day.
Absolutely. And I was in with the right people, and they parked my car, and they said, nothing will happen to you. It was perfect. That's all. I like North End. North End were my people.
That sounds awesome. Coach, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week. Enjoy your weekend.
All right, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Kevin McHale, Basketball Hall of Famer. Interesting things on, like, having to hire his staff or people on his staff. Also, the fact that, you know, he thinks that you needed experience in basketball, not necessarily that it was coaching experience before you had to step right in. And that story about the mafia and the food, that's
we'll get him to tell their story, especially when it starts slowing down with other sports. He has stories about going to Grateful Dead concerts with Walton and stuff that are just amazing.
Yeah, that's really good. 713-780-ESPN. When we come back, is it time to start getting concerned about moving Deshaun Watson before draft night? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, NFL Draft, 2022 Draft, April 28th. We know that the Houston Texans have the 3rd overall pick. Nick Caserio said he is open for business. And then, of course, Deshaun Watson. What is the return you get for Deshaun Watson? Although that might be putting the cart before the horse a little bit, right? Now, do we have a sense where there should be a concern about moving Deshaun Watson before late April?
I've got a lot of concerns, and they actually popped up last night, more so than ever before. Cameron from Fitz Roofing was over at my house because they were doing measurements for a fence for my yard, and he's a big listener to the show, and he's a big sports fan, and we started talking about it. And he was interested, like, he was talking about Caserio and what he thought he could get for Watson. And then I started just kind of in my head thinking about it, going, you know, Deshaun is supposed to do his deposition this month. And you hope that speeds the process along. But the draft is April 28th. So you better hope that after he's deposed and he gives whatever he needs to give to Busby and others, you better hope that there's progress on all 22 cases to the point where, in a very, very small window now again, and the time is dwindling with every day, that they can get a whole lot done. Because I don't think Busby has any problem dragging his feet. And if you're Nick Caserio and the Texans, especially if you want to get the most you possibly can for Deshaun Watson, you can't afford to go into another draft without knowing where everybody's picking and make a trade for Deshaun without basically at least feeling like you're not going to maximize what you're getting back, because if you miss the draft, now you're starting from square one again, because no matter who you trade them to, if they're a good team, you might turn out to be the Harden Nets pick and get really bad first-round picks.
Or you hold on to him for another year.
And that would suck even more, because like we just talked about the bottom line. What owner wants to pay him another ungodly sum of money to not play?
It's kind of a secondary topic, and it's kind of a nitpicky one. Like, do you trade him after the draft for pennies on the dollar, or do you keep him for another 12 months until the 2023 NFL draft? But as it relates to 2022, like, you would have liked to see some progress mm-hmm. in this. And maybe progress is being made and it's not being, you know, talked about publicly. Because, you know, I mean, like, Rusty Harden's not going to leak anything. Rusty Harden has been very quiet. The only time he has talked has been specific in certain press conferences, whereas Tony Busby has done most of the talking. And the last time we heard of Tony Busby, he was deposing one of the, I guess, the people, one of the ladies that was setting up the massages for Deshaun Watson. And she just, you know, pled the fifth over and over again.
You would think. You want to believe what the undercurrent was when we didn't hear anything. They're working behind the scenes to get as many of these done as possible. But then the next thing you hear from anybody, it's Busby, and he's making fun of basically the lady that just pleaded the fifth, even though a lot of it was already known knowledge that she admitted to, going, this is where we're at. And that makes you think they may never get this done.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know, because you could also say, well, was that just Busby's attempt to try to push this over the edge? Like, it's tough to know what's going on behind those closed doors between a couple of heavyweight attorneys. But as far as the Texans are concerned, like, something needs to happen pretty quickly. Like, you have to figure out, not from the Texans, but, like, you would love it from a Texans perspective if the Deshaun Watson stuff got figured out in terms of the civil cases that he has with over 20 women, and then also to see if the grand jury indicts Deshaun Watson. I was told by several people, we had some insiders actually tweet us that worked with, like, the DA in Houston, saying to expect something soon and expect something in January. Well, it's February 3rd, and nothing has happened. So, like, every day that passes by is another day that you're further and further away from trading Deshaun Watson by the April 28th draft that starts in 2022. So, yeah, I mean, it's concerning for sure. There's still some time there. You still have a couple of months. But, boy, this thing has been lingering around for a very long time.
Yeah, and that's what worries me the most, right? We already had to endure it for one full year based on the fact that they couldn't get anything done, resolved, and you didn't know where anybody was picking. Mm-hmm. And so you were like, well, you got to kind of just use your best guesses and start dealing with teams that you figure are still going to be where in the ballpark where they were. Now, if you got to do it 2 years in a row, and then there's also questions from the other side, too, from the team perspective that's making the trade with you. It's also where you start evaluating at a certain point, this guy hasn't been hit or gone through the NFL grind or a football grind for almost 2 years. It does make a difference. Guys do start to, your body adjusts differently and you relax a little bit. You got to get that back. Most, you know, a guy of Deshaun's caliber, you believe, will get it back.
Right.
But where is he going to be when he comes back? Because the expectations are going to be sky high for, we're getting a guy that's supposed to keep our franchise or turn it around in the right direction, as opposed to we got to wait for him to get back in football shape.
Oh, it's a fair point, and there's going to be a rush factor. I just don't know if it's going to deter teams away from trading for Deshaun Watson. Like, anybody who's trading for Deshaun Watson, a dude who's had all the legal issues that Deshaun Watson has had, they're desperate for a quarterback, right? So I don't think they're going to look at the rust factor. Now, let's play the hypothetical that something doesn't happen by the April 28th trade deadline or the draft, because that's when you want to trade them, April 28th, 2022, coming up in a couple of months. Now, I believe that you're still – and the point that you brought up is a good one. Like, you don't want to have that big contract under your roster going into 2022 – I would absorb the contract and wait it out for another year, because you're not going to be in a position next year where you're going to be a playoff team anyways. So you can afford it more than a team that's like expected to go 10-7 and make the playoffs and contend for their division. So I still feel like you need to hold strong if something isn't done by April 28th. But if this lingers for another year, like, there's already tons of Deshaun Watson fatigue in this city. Could you imagine doing it for another 12 months?
Yeah, and I mean, look, just from our listeners' perspective alone, it's almost like they cringe when his name comes up in a certain segment. But it's still on the books as something we have to talk about because it's unresolved. Because it's still like that dark cloud that's hanging out over the franchise that they can't escape. It's like the shade of Jack Easterby, only bigger, because you actually could get some value for getting rid of Deshaun. But you have to be able to make the deal. And the other thing that you're very, very cognizant of is you don't want to take pennies on the dollar unless you absolutely have to. And this is the kind of delay that leads you down a road that you don't want to go down of taking pennies on the dollar just to say, I got to get rid of him, man. It's killing us.
And it's Casario's best asset.
Yes.
Like, if you talk about speeding up the process of rebuilding and getting to the playoffs sooner rather than later, which I think at the very beginning and the very most optimism thought doesn't begin until 2023, like years 3 of 5 of Nick Caserio, then that also requires the Kings ransom that you're expected to get for Deshaun Watson. Like having the third pick this year and the third pick next year, like that's going to be great having two prospects. But if you could get 3 first-rounders for Deshaun, which apparently is the going rate, if you kind of put that with the other picks that you currently have, now you're in a position where you can get excited for the future. You can look at some players that are, you know, going to have some buzz that you can get excited about. But if you're just relying on the only picks that you have, it's going to take a long time for this team to get back into playoff contention.
No doubt. And Jeremy, here's the other thing. Whether he gets traded or not, you know that there's going to be offers and rumors floated for Aaron Rodgers. And what we said about even a Christian Wood, we're like following the Jeremy Grant trade rumors, because once he goes to teams that miss out on him, they're going to go to the next best. If Rodgers is out there, at least being dangled out there in trade discussions, and you know 3 first-rounds for a guy of his age are going to be the norm, the next best option you got, Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson. So at a certain point, Deshaun's going to be on teams' radars because they feel like they're a good quarterback away, and those good quarterbacks are drying up, right? Jimmy Garoppolo's not a guy that a team wants to resort to. They'd rather look at a Deshaun Watson going, still young, not damaged, we could use him. What's it going to take to get him if we can't get player A or player B? But the one thing that they're not going to do is try to make a deal if that black cloud of all those cases is still hanging over everybody's head.
Jimmy Garoppolo, one quarterback that's obviously going to be in the quarterback carousel this offseason. 3 teams expected to be aggressive in the pursuit of Jimmy Garoppolo. But what are the other real quarterback options for teams looking to improve the position, and which quarterbacks can actually get moved? We discuss it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit 1 per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.